Hi, I'm Chris Bedford, Dorothy Wagner Wallace, Director of the Baltimore Museum of Art. Welcome to Art Matters, a monthly feature where we provide insights into the work of some of today's most creative artists from Baltimore and beyond. Joining me today is Candice Bryce, a South African-born artist now based in Berlin, who is known for powerful video installations that prompt reflection on whose voices matter, whose are to be believed, and how we should respond to them. So, Candice, thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure to be here.
So you have two big multi-channel installations on view at the BMA at present. One that deals with refugees and another one that deals with South African sex workers. And in one, you use the voices and the presence of Alec Baldwin and Julianne Moore. And another is an extraordinary emoji-inflected Greek chorus setup. So that is very hard to envision when on the radio. So could you tell us a little bit about how these stories came to your attention, why you're interested in them, and what viewers can expect to see in our galleries?
Sure. Well, both works really grow out of lived experiences in the world. A lot of my work has, in the last couple of decades, just grown out of things that have happened to me or around me. So the first work, which is called Love Story, was really a response to the refugee crisis that unfolded across Europe, and Berlin, where I'm based, was a sort of hot point for that crisis in the summer of 2015. And really, more than a response to the crisis itself, a response to the way that that crisis was represented in the mainstream media, whereby all kinds of really sort of fatuous simplifications were made around who was coming and why they were coming. And essentially, people were treated statistically. So we never really got to understand the reasons why people were moving and leaving behind everything that they knew, but more just to hear how many were coming and how they were going to destroy our cultures and our social benefits and our jobs and our women and all those kinds of things. That was the starting point for the first work. And just to speak directly to your question, mm-hmm. the second work, which is titled TLDR, came out of a far, and well, an equally brutal and violent situation on a smaller scale. I think it was 2013, a young sex worker was murdered on the streets of Cape Town by one of South Africa's most respected and celebrated artists. And the case that unfolded around that murder was one which was fairly exemplary, apart from the fact that the murderer was a famous artist, was fairly exemplary for the way that sex workers experience violence. And through a protest situation around the work of this artist, whose name is Zweletu Mthethwa, we got to know each other, myself and the sex work community that was mourning the young woman who died. Her name was Nokopila Kumalo. And we started to talk about the possibility of collaborating and extending my practice as a storyteller, extending their practice as schooled activists, and trying to find a space somewhere between to develop innovative ways mm-hmm. of communicating and telling the story of the struggle of sex workers for basic human dignity, as well as for human rights and labor rights.
So these stories unfold in our galleries in a very particular way. You have a very particular rhetoric to your work and a set of logics that you apply. You develop immersive multimedia environments, a lot of moving image, a lot of sound, dark spaces, and I think you have a conviction that the moving image can confiscate a particular amount of contemporary attention, that this delivery mechanism is very effective in the contemporary moment. So could you comment on why the moving image? I remember listening to a very sophisticated conceptual artist once say to me, Manet, if he were working today, would not be a painter. Manet would work in video. So do you share that position?
Well, I suppose what's important to me about video is just the fact that it comes down to accessibility. And I've never really been interested in making work only for other people who have a sort of professional relationship to art. Mm-hmm. And I've always been interested in working with tools that where I'd have a chance of drawing in a sort of wide range of interlocutors who may not have a specialized relationship to art. And obviously, each and every one of us really has a range of experiences with moving images in our daily lives. So it lends itself to at least opening up the door to a conversation with an audience in a way that certain other forms one would have to work harder in certain other mediums. I'm not saying it's impossible. But
I think that's fascinating, though, that you elected a medium to meet a certain access demand that you had. You wanted the message to be received by a broad number of people, and therefore you chose this medium to deliver it.
Well, the thing is, you know, my art education was extremely kind of dusty and old school. We studied painting and sculpture, but I went to art school on the tip of the African continent in Johannesburg during the years of apartheid, and I was acutely aware as a sort of young person who was finding a political consciousness of the fact that the education that I was having was one which was inaccessible to over 90% of South Africans as a result of the kind of authoritarian structures that apartheid had set in place. And it seemed to me absurd that one would only value the intelligence and the response of those who had simply been born in the right place at the right time and had access to specialized language and specialized ways of thinking. Because obviously you can be highly intelligent and highly engaged without having had the luxury of being educated in a certain way. And so it seemed to me that I didn't want to only communicate with the other people who had the same privileges that I myself had.
Related also to this question of access and communication, you go to great pains to do a couple of things in almost every video. I think you want to center, embody, and humanize your subjects. You go to great pains to make sure that those voices are represented in your work. Whatever the subject is, they're present, they're participating, and they're sort of co-author in what you do. And then I think you go to great pains to bring visibility to topical and difficult issues by using unexpected means. So Alec Baldwin and Julianne Moore being a really good example. They're unavoidable public figures, and because they're speaking, people listen and you exploit that fact. So could you talk a little bit about those two methods, because they seem to me so central to everything you do?
I'm interested in how we, as people who are makers of art and thinkers around art, how we can compete within the attention economy. I think it's naive to imagine that we can continue to have broad conversations within the limitations of language that are accessible to such a small number of people. And I'm really interested in that sort of broadness. And I think that in a way we do have to compete with the attention economy. We do have to understand that it mostly costs as much to visit a museum as it does to go to a film or go to a sports event. And I think we've got to work to show people that there's a value in cultural experience. And so when I engage Alec and Julianne, I do so obviously with the knowledge that they come with a certain audience and a certain appeal, and that's the starting point. But from that point on, I believe that you can use the same tools to do a completely different job. And Alec and Julianne were generous enough to allow me to really put them in a position which was extremely unknown to them, and to do so with an understanding of where I was going. I mean, they really become avatars for white privilege and for white visibility. And in each of these works, there are avatars for my own privilege. I think it's immensely important. So many artists today and so many people who live privilege attempt to represent precarity or engage with precarity, and that is a goal which comes with immense responsibility and a need to proceed with great care and caution. And of course, hopefully one engages with people who keep one honest and who call one when one is heading in the wrong direction. So anyway, I feel that it's impossible to represent experiences which one hasn't lived without thinking about how one's own presence in under conditions of precarity or within precarious communities, how one's own presence inflicts the way that people can be in a space. And I think that when you come into a space with privilege, you invariably it affects the way that things unfold. And I feel like that needs to be written into the work. So it may not be visible as the kind of primary thing that the works are doing, but I hope that the works at some level are also reflections on what it means to try and represent in transformative ways or in progressive ways from the perspective of privilege, which invariably is always getting in the way, and it's always undermining the potential of doing something meaningful.
And then just briefly, in both TLDR and Love Story, there is a great effort to center the actual subject of your analysis as person and as co-author. So in the TLDR, I think it's really striking. You walk in and the projection spans an incredibly long wall, and you see a series of sex workers holding various different banners announcing positions. You have a young man in the center. That young man is sort of the narrator. You occasionally enter the set, and it's an extraordinary visual experience. But within that, there is a centering of the subject that's so insistent. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I am interested in subjects who look back and speak back. And I think that I do think to some extent of my practice as an extended documentary. Mm-hmm. But of course, the foibles or the what you need to take on if you step into a documentary legacy is this kind of problem of one person being the one who's looking and the other person being the one who's being looked at. And so I try to use a variety of strategies to make that documentary moment less comfortable for those who are experiencing the pieces. My subjects are always invited to look out very directly at the camera. Often when you're interviewed, you're told not to look at the camera. Mm. My subjects always look directly into the camera. They speak. They're never interrupted. They're allowed to speak at great length. And I think that that produces a different kind of space. It produces a more one-on-one relationship, or at least, if one is open to it, an opportunity to feel the subjectivity of the people who are addressing you.
Candice, thanks so much for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure to be here.
You can see Candice Bryce, Too Long Didn't Read, at the BMA through January 10th, 2021. Thank you for listening today. Art Matters is produced for WYPR by the Baltimore Museum of Art. And for the Baltimore Museum of Art, I'm Chris Bedford.